On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the summer of 2020, Attorney General Josh Call announced the launch of a missing and murdered Indigenous women task force to help fight the abduction, homicide, violence, and trafficking of Indigenous women.
This is an issue that is nationwide. It is impacting tribal communities across the United States, and Wisconsin, unfortunately, is no exception to that.
Courtesy of Spectrum News One, the task force, made up of dozens of members, started meeting at the end of 2020. Their work continues. Their first quarterly meeting of this year was Friday. What do you want to know about their progress? Do you live in a tribal community? Can you describe the extent of the problem and offer solutions? It's 800-642-1234. Justine Rufus is co-chair of the Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. She is rural coordinator for the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault and a member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Justine, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be back with you.
Well, get us up to speed on the work the task force has been digging into. Give us an update.
So the task force has been really busy. I think I mentioned this the last time, but we've established four subcommittees mm-hmm. that have really been active in gathering information and finding solutions. And I think what's really wonderful about these subcommittees is they've been really actionable, really trying to look at things that we can do now to make change for this issue. So we have...
Yes, go ahead. Explain what the subcommittees are doing.
So we have four subcommittees, the Data Committee, the Family Impact Committee, the Systems Committee, and Legal Committee. So each one of them are tasked with different areas of interest that they're taking on and really trying to find solutions for MMIW. We've been really active with having family listening sessions where we're really trying to really hear from the families about some of their issues, their concerns that they have, things that they would like to see in the report. So I think that that's been very important for us to really listen to our families and what they're what they've encountered for problems around this.
You've had some deep connections with family members and family members coming to you who are going through this trauma. How does that affect when families come to the task force? How does that affect your work?
I think it centers us in the work. I think it really is important for us to always listen to the families and hear what they're telling us. They're the ones that are encountering these systematic issues still to this day when they're fighting for demanding justice for their lost loved one. And so I think it really is important to engage in families and hear what is currently happening when they're encountering situations where they've lost someone. So we're pleased to have families that share their stories. It's really important. And I think that it's what leads the work.
Mm. There are more than three dozen people who are part of the task force, many voices from many different areas and interests. Do you feel like you can be productive and accomplish things with the size of the group?
Actually, you know, that has not been an issue like we initially in the, you know, when it started to grow and folks were so interested. I think the subcommittees were very helpful in trying to be more active and engaging. And so those groups are broken up into smaller groups. And so those folks, as they meet together, are really being grounded and really accomplishing some things right now. And really pleased to see that they've talked about their being very active in finding solutions in the areas that they can make impacts in. So I think that that's really important.
Let's look more closely at data. This has been a missing puzzle piece, if you will, and trying to get more data, gather more data on this issue, on invisible women, if you will. What can you tell us about the number of missing and murdered Indigenous women in the state and where you're at with data gathering?
I really appreciate that question because, unfortunately, one of the issues that we have is there isn't data around that. And so we've hired on a research team to really help us guide that area. And what we're finding is, unfortunately, the numbers aren't there. Like, we and they're not accurate, you know. So from one database to another, they're much different. And so that's going to be a part of our final report. Is unfortunately, that's an issue that we see nationwide, is that the numbers are not, the information isn't being included in national databases. And so I think that we don't have that exact number.
So when you say you've hired on a research team, what are they looking to do in terms of trying to gather data? Where are they searching for it?
Yeah, so they're in the early stages of that. So they work really closely with their subcommittee members to kind of capture what we're finding within those small committees. And then they'll be doing some researches and as we get closer to the final report in some databases that currently exist in the state of Wisconsin.
And when you say the final report, you're anticipating by year's end, you're going to be able to put together a full report from this task force?
Yes, by December 2022 is the deadline for that. That we should be including having a final report and an implementation plan completed by that time.
We're talking with Justine Rufus, who is co-chair of Wisconsin's Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. It held its first meeting of the year on Friday, for quarterly meeting, I should say, of the year on Friday. You can join in. What do you want to see this task force focus on next? What are you anticipating policy-wise out of this final report? 800-642-1234 to join in. You have four lawmakers on the task force. How much policy recommendations do you think will come out of the final report that the task force puts together and that you want the legislature to take up in the future?
I think we have a number of policy recommendations that will be coming in the final report, along with legislative recommendations that we will have within the report, and that absolutely will include recommendations for systems and law enforcement.
Attorney General Josh Call said a missing and murdered Indigenous women database is necessary. Can we expect a database like that?
I would love to see the state of Wisconsin really be the pioneer in creating a database that just captures MMIW. I know that other states, including Washington, are really looking into creating systems like this where we just capture that information. And I hope that the Department of Justice takes that on, if that's what the Attorney General is looking at for the future of MMIW, is to create that database. But right now it doesn't exist, and I'm not sure if that's what we will see.
What has been the involvement of DOJ in the task force work thus far? How would you characterize it?
Well, you know, they've actually assigned staff members to help us with the task force. So we now have Brooke, who is a full-time worker that works with the task force, and then their public relations has always been extremely active in weekly meetings and really guiding, helping us with this work. And so they've been very involved and very active with the MMIW task force.
Justine Rufus co-chairs the State Department of Justice's Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. The task force last met Friday. We're getting an update. Has your family been struck by this type of tragedy? Can you talk about it? What do you think of the committee's work? What policies and laws should be on the books in Wisconsin to protect Native women and girls? Join in. Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Justine Rufus here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Urban Indian Health Institute had issued a report in 2018 and identified a nationwide data crisis on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. A task force inside Wisconsin's Justice Department, launched in 2020, aims to work on closing the gaps in data collection and investigating cases, properly supporting families, and developing policy actions so Indigenous women and girls are not invisible Do you live on a reservation? What connection do you have to this devastating issue? What will it take to shine a light on it? 800-642-1234. Justine Rufus is co-chair of the task force and with us for about 10 more minutes. Justine, you had a presentation Friday by the grassroots advocacy organization called Great Plains Action Society, which is working on this issue in a large swath of the middle of the country. What did you learn from them and their work that is pertinent to Wisconsin?
I think what we learn and when we hear presentations, our stories are similar across the nation. In fact, this issue is international. It's not something that is just impacting our community, but it's definitely a nationwide issue. I really found it interesting that a lot of the families that she spoke about really were interconnected with Wisconsin. And the work that they do is so important because they actually give direct assistance to the families that are going through this crisis. And that was one of the most important things that I thought this organization was really impactful directly to the family members.
What would direct assistance entail?
And so I know that they have helped with gas for folks that have traveled from Wisconsin to the hearing in another state. And so they really do help families directly with getting to the court that they have to make it to demand justice for their families. And so and they're one of the only organizations that I know of that really have provided an assistance in that type of way. There just isn't funding out there to help our families. And so we're really working hard here in Wisconsin to even look at that for the future of our families. Is there somewhere where they can go for assistance?
And when you say there isn't funding for families, when a family member goes missing, a woman or a girl goes missing, what are the resources that a family needs in that very difficult time?
They lack so many resources. It's unbelievable. Families, you know, we talk about the fact that they don't even have, the families are creating their own flyers. Mm. They're trying to go out and recruit people to do searches. And the families are really tasked with everything that we would imagine somewhere else outside of tribal areas where somebody else would be tasked with that responsibility. We find in Indian country that the families are faced doing all this work on their own.
Also outside of Wisconsin, a notable development, the Department of the Interior established the Missing and Murdered Unit to pursue justice. What are you watching for out of the federal government and the Interior Department? Justine, are you there? Yeah, okay, yep. Go ahead.
We know that the President Biden asked for a report to be done nationwide. And so we're really looking to see what he looks for actionable items in across the nation.
We're talking about Wisconsin's Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women with its co-chair, Justine Rufus. You can join in. Do you live in a tribal community? Have you experienced domestic violence? Or do you see this as a big picture issue where you are? What do you think can be done to help? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Looking more closely at root causes, Justine, what has the task force found about the root causes of increased violence against Indigenous women?
You know, I initially, when I started this work, I would say things like it's jurisdictional issues that were impacting this. Maybe there are system issues that we're facing. But as you delve into the MMIW issues, there's layers and layers of issues that our families face when it comes to demanding justice for our families or even filing a missing persons report. I think that what I've discovered is that there's so many underlying systematic issues that we really need to talk about even before we superficially say it's jurisdiction. And I'll give you an example of that. A lot of times for our police forces within our tribal communities don't have access to the state retirement plan. And so what we tend to see in tribal communities is a lot of new recruits or new officers. And then as soon as they're able to find a job outside of our tribal areas, they'll move on because they don't have a retirement plan within our tribes. And so when we're looking at a person that's gone missing and all we have is new officers that are looking at missing persons cases, the outcome is not as good as if we had someone who had a lot of experience in finding missing persons. And so we see these type of systematic issues throughout in multiple layers when it comes to our communities and in tribal communities.
Do you think officers are getting adequate training? Are they getting trained up in missing persons and missing Indigenous women and girls?
No, that's one area that we are really trying to move and trying to work with recruit schools currently in Wisconsin to include some of training for our communities and how to work with our victims within tribal jurisdiction. And even that basic information about them being tribal jurisdiction and what that means when they walk into tribal tribes, how they would work with the tribes directly to move cases forward.
The final report, it may include a recommendation for a permanent office to address missing and murdered Indigenous women in Wisconsin. What would that office look like? What is the conversation around this?
So we strongly feel like, and this is a topic that has come across because of a lot of our task force members have been asked to get involved in missing person cases that are currently happening. And so we strongly feel that this office needs to be Indigenous led, and it needs to be more, we kind of see two positions. One is working with within the Department of Justice would be great to continue on MMIW through that avenue. But the second thing is to work directly with the families. And so we kind of see these as MMIW advocates. So when somebody goes missing, it would be somebody that would engage with the families directly and trying to help them, because that's what we're lacking is the support for our families.
And I would imagine, too, the coordination, just being able to navigate what are the next steps. I mean, families are kind of on their own, I would imagine.
Yes, they are. So that coordination is an area we definitely need here in the state of Wisconsin.
Have you seen this working elsewhere?
This would actually be a pilot idea that would come out of Wisconsin. And so we're excited about introducing this into our final report.
While we have you on the line, I want to ask you about the Violence Against Women Act, because Congress renewed and updated it just this month. President Biden signed it into law last week. At the federal level, what effort do you see to address this crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people? And what about the Violence Against Women Act?
I think the Violence Against Women Act always helps us move this issue forward. And it's one area that we have been able to incorporate laws to really attack the MMIW issue. I think that it's very small steps. You know, when we look at the broad issue of MMIW, this is one very small step towards a resolution or trying to address this crisis. I know that we had a big win this time because we were able to expand that language from domestic violence to sexual assault, to sexual abuse, to child abuse, and then also extending that law to include Alaska was very important for and a huge win for the issue of MMIW. But like I said, this is one small law that was put into place to move this issue. I think that we have a long, long way to go.
A long way to go as well in awareness. And I want to wrap up there. Coming up in May is Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Day of Awareness. What is the task force doing to create more awareness of this problem?
We are so pleased to say that this year the task force has so many events that they're going to be involved in. I know that there's going to be something done at the Capitol, so we're proud of that group that's bringing that issue to the Capitol. We also have a youth group out of La Crosse that I'm so proud of that is going to be doing a 5K run, and the youth is leading that effort in La Crosse. And so I will be in La Crosse this year And then the college has reached out to me to do a presentation. So I know a number of the universities are really creating awareness around this. So we're really pleased about the public awareness that's going to happen on May 5th.
Justine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I really enjoy joining you always.
We appreciate you. Justine Rufus, co-chair of the Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. We have a link to the task force's work. That's part of the Department of Justice's site. You can get to it from WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, the State Capitol Report continues with the secretary designee of the Wisconsin Department of Administration. We explore Kathy Blumenfeld's fiscal and workforce priorities for an agency that's charged with streamlining government. What government agency issue do you want the DOA to tackle? 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Now to the new head of the State Department of Administration, which works closely with the governor to develop and carry out the state budget, also helping to innovate and streamline state government programs and agencies. Joel Brennan stepped down from his cabinet post in January. Governor Evers appointed Kathy Blumenfeld. What state government agency or program has helped you the most 2 years into the pandemic? What do you think is wasteful spending or a government service that could use streamlining? What issue do you think DOA could tackle? 800-642-1234. Kathy Blumenfeld, secretary designee of the Wisconsin Department of Administration, previously secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions. Secretary designee Blumenfeld, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. It is a pleasure to be here this morning.
Good morning. So Department of Administration, tongue in cheek, they say Department of All. What do you see as the role of DOA?
Well, as you mentioned just a moment ago, we work very closely with Governor Evers to carry out the overall goals of the administration. And jokingly, they do call it the Department of All. And I'm 2 months into the role now and really understanding why they call it the Department of All. So many unique programs that are housed at DOA. So it's been a joy learning about all of them and figuring out priorities for the remainder of our term and hopefully into next term.
I imagine you turn over, you learn about a new one every day.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that the top priorities right now for us is to build on the work that that Joel Brennan had begun and really to continue to build out a strong and agile, a diverse and resilient workforce. So as you've seen and everyone has seen, state employees have gone above and beyond during the pandemic, including frontline workers, healthcare, you know, keeping our computers running to keep our state running and our people safe during the pandemic. So we have a Vision 2030 report that was done late last year that really looks at the future of our state workforce and our workplace and highlights some of the main challenges that the state of Wisconsin sees, including an aging workforce, aging infrastructure, limits on talent attraction, and our need to continue to adapt our technology and infrastructure. So we're really focused on continuing to modernize our workforce, our workplace, and the government services that we offer. So that's been a really big focus of DOA and will continue to be, as well as supporting the governor's efforts to fuel Wisconsin's recovery from the pandemic.
Along the path of workforce for just a moment, you just made a leadership change overseeing the Division of Personnel Management, that division that provides HR help for more than 20 state agencies, over 34,000 state employees. As we see businesses in the private sector struggling with recruitment, struggling to retain employees, what has that been like inside state government?
Well, I think inside state government, we see many of the same things that we see in the private sector. So we're really trying to modernize, build on the things that we learned during the pandemic, how we can use technology to improve collaboration, which will also allow us to hire from everywhere around the state, leveraging our technology and collaboration tools so that we really have a culturally and geographically diverse workforce. So we want to do everything in our power to continue to make the state of Wisconsin a destination place to work.
So, yes, how do you make the state of Wisconsin an employer of choice? How do you do that?
I think first off, by having good good wage-paying jobs, and secondly, creating a culture where people want to work, understanding that people need flexibility, they need the technology to do their job well, and they need to have a supported work environment that not only is challenging and exciting, it's diverse, and you're able to bring your whole self to your work.
Talking with Kathy Blumenfeld, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Administration, looking at the role of DOA in these times, you can join in. Have you struggled to pay your mortgage or household bills during the pandemic? What would you like to know about Wisconsin's Help for Homeowners program, one of the DOA priorities? 800-642-1234 to join in. Kathy, you have a deep background in finance and consumer protection. How do you see this parlaying into your job for the Department of Administration, or that financial background as a role and as a leader in DOA?
Well, I'm so grateful to have had the experience at the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions, and being a CPA and having a financial background really lends itself well to doing this job, since we do manage the state budget, and that is a big part of what we do at DOA, and we're just gearing up for the next biennial budget process. We also do bonding and are the program administrators for right now billions of dollars that are coming from the federal government to help fuel our recovery from the pandemic. So all of those things will allow me to utilize my financial skills every day. And then on the consumer protection side, really programs like Wisconsin's Help for Homeowners and the other pandemic relief programs, we always have an eye towards helping people, making Wisconsin have an economy that works for everyone. And our programs really help those that are struggling get back on track, and so that they can have economic opportunities just like everyone else.
I want to hone in here on the billions of dollars in pandemic aid, CARES Act, ARPA, and I want to ask you the exact same question that I asked your predecessor, Joel Brennan, in September, as we were attempting to get clarity on tracing where the $4.59 billion in federal aid is going to in Wisconsin. Do you think there has been adequate fiscal accountability and transparency in the process of federal pandemic relief aid flowing into Wisconsin?
Yes, I do believe that we've been very transparent through the process. So as you mentioned, the $4.5 billion, which includes our current ARPA funds, the American Rescue Plan Act funds that we're administering now, we've had about $2 billion that have gone for pandemic recovery and public health, $1.3 billion for economic resilience, and $680 million for community building, among other investments. And these investments have gone to all 72 counties in our state. We have a really transparent website called badgerbounceback.wisconsin.gov that you can go to and check out where all the funds are being distributed. And we're continuing to build out this website so that you'll have additional visualizations and opportunities to slice and dice the data. And of course, we've always also been very compliant, working closely with Treasury and doing all the reporting that is mandated along with the funds.
So I was just at Badger Bounce Back and looking at the data and the presentation of it. So you're saying that DOA is continually still updating this information and the data there so that people can see where this money is flowing?
Yes, absolutely. So you'll find all of our different programs and how where the awards have gone. You can look at it visually on a state map. And we will continue to build this out as new programs come along and continue to provide different opportunities to look at the data and query it in a way to answer questions. But again, trying to be very transparent in this process.
I want to ask you about that. Republican lawmakers, the legislature tried to pass legislation to have a say in where the federal aid, the billions in aid, is being directed to. Do you think the Evers administration has, you know, has received enough input or has too much control, too much power over how our state recovers and who is prioritized in this recovery with the money?
Sure. Well, our goal in the state of Wisconsin and the Governor Evers administration is really to ensure that this one-time federal funding is spent efficiently and effectively. So we've done listening sessions all through the administration, the 3 years that we've been here, and have a good handle on where the needs are and through the pandemic as well. So we're trying to utilize that information plus all the data that is collected at our state agencies to really put together programs that are meaningful and impactful and helpful so that we continue to fuel our economic and health recovery in the state of Wisconsin. So again, this is in the power of the governor to utilize and make these decisions. And we're focused as hard as we can, as fast as we can, to work closely with Treasury to make sure the programs that we're establishing are in line with the way that the intention of the funds are to be used and continue to help people. We're very action-oriented in our administration and trying to get the funds to the people that need it the most.
Kathy Blumenfeld, Secretary Designee of the Department of Administration and Agency, crosses into a whole lot of state government initiatives and planning, including helping the governor craft and carry out a state budget. Do you think the Evers administration is allowing enough input about how federal pandemic aid is being allocated? How could state government be more innovative in assisting Wisconsin families? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, how has your neighborhood or community been damaged by the pandemic? How should the state reinvest in your community? What do you want the State Department of Administration, the DOA, to know, since it's an agency that is involved in the inner workings of state fiscal management? And DOA supports government agencies that are delivering on programs and services to Wisconsinites. Where is red tape that you want addressed? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. DOA Secretary Designee Kathy Blumenfeld with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's focus in on some programs here, some specifics. Earlier this month, Governor Evers launched Wisconsin Help for Homeowners. What does this program do?
So this is a program through the American Rescue Plan Act. It's a $92 million program that aims to help homeowners avoid foreclosure. So really important there. We're very excited about this program. We've held two public input sessions. So we designed the program around having that public input, and it really helps tackle overdue housing bills, including mortgage, utilities, internet, and local property taxes in arrears. Again, it's designed to help those who have struggled so much during the pandemic get some peace of mind as costs are going up. We have a website. Oh, go ahead.
What is the application process like for families?
That's great. We have partnered with our 16 community action organizations statewide, as well as Take Root Wisconsin. They will help individuals process applications, but we really encourage you to go to the website, homeownerhelp.wisconsin.gov. It's a fairly simple application to work through. And again, these CAP organizations are there to provide assistance, as well as a call center that we have that will also provide assistance. So it's pretty simple, the online application. And a few things just to note that folks don't have to have been sick with COVID to apply. We've had already over 4,000 applications come in already. So I'd say to people out there, if you're thinking about it and you're struggling and you need help, don't wait. Come on today, sign on to our website, homeownerhelp.wisconsin.gov, and send that application in. One thing that's really important to note is that the payments through this program are made directly to mortgage lenders, utility providers, and treasurers. So the payments go from the state right to the places where you've been struggling to make payments.
So how long does it take for a household to find their status when they do apply? What is that timeline like?
Well, again, we just opened the program up March 7th, and I have had over 4,000 applications. So I can't give you a specific timeline, but I do know that it'll be a few weeks, depending on what type of help that you're looking for, whether it's mortgage, utility, treasurers, because we also at the same time have those folks signing up and joining the program as well.
Are you expecting that Wisconsin will see an influx in foreclosures due to the pandemic?
Well, I think just because of the pandemic and the struggling that has taken place, that's exactly why we designed this program. This program is somewhat similar to the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, WERA, if people are familiar with that, but it's really focused on homeowners. So if you have a single family home, a duplex, a condo, a factory built home, this is the program for you as opposed to renters through the WERA program.
And these are primary residences. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Talking with Kathy Blumenfeld, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Administration, what questions do you have for the DOA? How has your neighborhood or community been affected by the pandemic? Where do you see a gap in resources? 800-642-1234. The governor had originally proposed increasing the income eligibility for Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, Native Americans, Asian Americans, and Pacific Islanders, but reversed course on that decision. And there, was a protest from the conservative law firm, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Why did the governor change course?
Sure. As you know, this program is funded and was approved by the U.S. Treasury. So we adjusted our plan as needed based on the updated guidance that came from the Treasury. So we worked very closely with the U.S. Treasury in developing this program and making sure that we were following all the program guidelines in developing our application criteria. So our goal really was to provide a lifeline to homeowners in need across Wisconsin.
Also this month, the governor announced that he would put more than $212 million toward the Neighborhood Investment Fund grant to help communities recover. What needs are you seeing around the state there?
Sure. Well, these grants are to local and tribal governments for capital-focused projects that help their communities deliver really innovative public services, including it could be new or improved facilities. So we're looking at addressing homelessness and lack of affordable housing as one of the key focus areas. But all the grants are really building for the future and seen as transformational investments and expanded community resource. So other focus areas include childcare centers, libraries, revitalizing communities, and developing incubators for entrepreneurs.
I think this kind of goes back to the Badger bounce back, because when I was looking at the data, the routes to recovery local government aid grants was one of the biggest circles or biggest allocations of money of federal aid. What are you hearing from local government partners as they try to address the pandemic? What are those urgent needs at the local level?
Sure. Well, I've been spending the last 2 months traveling around the state with the governor, and every stop we make, it is just unbelievable how appreciative and grateful these communities are for the help that they're receiving. These are projects that they're shovel ready, but they've never been able to get off the ground. And they are transformational for the communities, whether it's healthcare sites, whether it is childcare. We know that childcare is a big impediment right now to mm-hmm. find quality and affordable childcare, as well as affordable housing. So there have literally been tears of joy as we've traveled around the state with the recipients of these grants, thinking about how transformational it will be for their communities.
You mentioned
very long-term impacts for the communities.
What are the long-term impacts as you look at the housing crunch, affordable housing in all corners of the state? I mean, we've talked to more than a dozen mayors, and the lack of affordable housing is something that comes up every time. What are you looking at there?
So we're looking at making an economy that works for everyone. And part of that is making sure that there is affordable and stable housing for everyone so that they don't have to have that worry going into a job or trying to provide for their families. That is taken care of. It's accessible. That leads to bigger opportunities for each person and really, again, an economy that works for all.
So as we wrap up here, what is your toughest challenge in this new role, in this new job? What do you really grapple with?
I think just learning everything. So there are so many programs within DOA, and there is so much need out there. It's trying to make sure that the programs that we're funding are really there to help people in need and to bounce back, not just, the way we were before the pandemic, but even stronger. Mm. And again, making an economy that works for everyone.
Kathy Blumenfeld, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate. Have a great day.
You too. Kathy Blumenfeld, Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Administration, previously served as Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions. You can find a link to Badger Bounce Back and other related links that we talked about here at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, tell us what issues your town, your village, your city is facing. What issues would you like to see the morning show address in future shows? Give us your ideas, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.